This show is brought to you by Gobble by Kevin Carr, a Thanksgiving novelette of the zombie apocalypse, and you thought your family dinner was stressful. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, yes, it is finally here. After 32 years of waiting and after 10 years since the last official movie, we have the new Star Wars film opening, Star Wars The Force Awakens. I will be talking about that in depth this week. Of course, that's what everyone wants to talk about. But also, I'm going to be talking about the counter-programming that's out there. Sisters, Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip, and a small little movie opening in limited release, Body. I'll also talk about news, the trailer park, some box office predictions, and the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Thanks, Ron Burgundy. Really, the most of the news that's been happening this week has been dominated by Star Wars, just because it's the biggest movie of the year. It's the biggest event movie of the year. I mean, yeah, you had Jurassic World that came out this summer, and this might actually beat it in terms of opening box office. Even though Jurassic World set its own record back in June, this is easily the most anticipated movie in years. I can't remember. Maybe The Dark Knight? I don't even know if The Dark Knight Rises would count. The Dark Knight was, and as anticipated, that summer you had a lot of stuff coming out. You had Iron Man coming out in May, and then you had Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull coming out. And I know people dump on that now, but it was a big movie back then. And then, of course, you had The Dark Knight coming out in July. That was the last time I remember this much fervor and excitement over a movie. And of course, it's the return of Star Wars. I remember there was this much excitement when Phantom Menace came out back in 1999. And I know there's a lot of people who dump on that as well, but that doesn't stop the excitement from happening. One of the things that's hit the news about Star Wars is that it's already made $100 million in pre-event ticket sales through places like Fandango and MovieTickets.com. This is stuff that was sold before it actually started playing in the United States. 55 million of that was contributing to the opening weekend, at least. Before somebody walked up to the box office and said, I want a ticket for this show playing at this time, this is a new record. It's a huge event. And of course, I'm going to be talking a lot more about Star Wars when I talk about it in my review segment and, of course, later in the box office segment. Another piece of news I want to hit is Riddick 4, the fourth Riddick movie. Vin Diesel has come out and said it's going to be an R-rated origin story. I guess, which is fine, because there's such a limited audience for these. I mean, I respect the heck out of Vin Diesel for doing these movies because they're his own pet projects. But these are not huge money-making films, and they're kind of crappy when you really look at them. They're not great movies, but they serve an audience, and you know, if he wants to do an R-rated origin story, good for him. At least he's got a market. And they're also getting into TV series. They're developing a TV series for Riddick, which to me begs that question of how many people are actually watching this stuff? Because I remember when the last Riddick movie came out in like September, it did fine for what it was, but it wasn't a huge blockbuster. It makes enough money to kind of pay the bills. Good for Vin Diesel. Not exactly sure why they're still making these movies. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is another movie that has Star in it, and that would be Star Trek Beyond. Opens July 22nd. The first teaser trailer hit this week and got some mixed reviews. Let's just go ahead and play this.
Is that music?
It's a good choice.
Hey, well played.
Yet, no ship, no crew. How are we gonna get out of this one?
We will find hope in the impossible.
Let's hope this doesn't get messy.
I am all for having fun with a Star Trek movie. And I loved J.J. Abrams' reboot of the series in 2009. I had some issues with Star Trek Into Darkness, mainly hinging upon the fact that he was doing so much with the mystery box. The mystery box thing works with Star Wars because the studio's behind him, and that's the kind of movie Star Wars is. Star Trek has never relied on the mystery box, and the mystery box in Star Trek Into Darkness was ill-conceived from the beginning. If you don't know the history behind the cascading directors of Star Trek Beyond, it started out, J.J. Abrams, of course, was maybe considering it, but he did Star Wars, which was a good move for him. Then it was going to go to Robert Orci, who's best known for writing the scripts, and he quit. And at the last minute, they got Justin Lin to come in. Now, here's the problem with Justin Lin. He's really only done one thing, and that's the Fast and Furious franchise. And even then, he did the third Fast and Furious movie, which people now retroactively say, well, no, that's really a good one. You certainly didn't like Tokyo Drift when it came out, because it did not do well. It wasn't until he continued doing Fast and Furious, Fast 5, Fast and Furious 6. But all Justin Lin is good at, in a Hollywood perspective, is Fast and Furious movies. And if you watch this teaser trailer, it looks like you're getting the Fast and Furious version of Star Trek. Which, Fast and Furious is about as far away from Star Trek as it possibly can be. Now, maybe it's just the choice of using Beastie Boys in the music. Maybe it's because there's a motorcycle stunt in the trailer and you can hear it in what I played. You hear this motorcycle. It's Star Trek. What is a motorcycle doing in Star Trek? That reeks of Fast and Furious mentality. Now, of course, once this thing debuted, Paramount has been on the defensive ever since. Simon Pegg came out and said, I didn't love it because I know there's a lot more to the film. There's a lot more story and a lot more character stuff, a lot more of what I would call Star Trek stuff. Which is interesting because he was originally brought in to script doctor the movie because it was too Star Trek-y. It shows that the studio doesn't want it to be like classic Trek. And I get that because you want to bring it to a new audience. But the problem when you're dealing with a fan franchise is you can't lose your core base. And they're in danger of losing that. Lin's come out in damage control mode. And here's some of the quotes from him. Quote, you're putting a 2-hour movie into a minute and a half. And the one thing I wanted to make sure is that hopefully represents that we are trying to be bold and take risks. That's the problem. Taking risks is director speak for, I want to do it my way and make it cool and hip and neat and unlike this boring stuff that I used to watch. And then finally, Lin's quote says, Star Trek has a very 1960s sensibility of who has the bigger ship usually wins, right? Well, no. If you actually go back and watch the original series and some of the movies, the bigger ships don't always win. That was kind of the point of the Borg. The Borg was unbeatable in this monstrosity. You had the Planet Eater in the original series. You had them going up against gods and winning. And that is what Classic Trek was. Classic Trek was never the bigger starship wins. This just shows that Lin has no idea. This mentality that's coming from Lin himself, the director, is basically saying exactly the problem with franchises. It's Hollywood coming in and going, well, we need to make it cool and hip. Let's throw in a rap song and put in a motorcycle chase and it'll be risky and cool. The problem now is they're going to be doing 7 months of damage control. Sort of like what Warner Brothers has been doing since they released the first Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice trailer and then have been doing damage control of saying, no, it's not all dark and gritty and no, it's still fun and it's still a superhero movie. This will be a problem. Trust me, this is going to be a plagued production. The next trailer I want to play really quickly is Independence Day Resurgence. Opens on June 24th.
I spent 20 years trying to get us ready for this. We used their technology to strengthen our planet. But it won't be enough. They're coming back. Definitely bigger than the last one.
You know, I'm okay with it, aside from it having the bah sound. Although, you know, I've been getting annoyed with movies like sci-fi, big action movies, destroying cities, because that seems to be the go-to threat now. Because you can do that digitally. You couldn't do that in the past. It was very difficult to achieve, but digital production, you can do that. I'm giving them a pass, though, because Independence Day kind of reinvented that in the 90s. But still casting, Liam Hemsworth, what the heck is he doing in here? And really, they should have stuck with Mae Whitman as the president's daughter. That just would have been cool. All the other original cast is back. Anyways, that's all I'm going to say about those movies. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the big movie of the weekend, Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip, and Body. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing the show. Before I jump into the big, huge movie of the week, which is, of course, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, I'll be reviewing that in the next segment and talking a little bit about my history and maybe even just a little bit about putting in perspective what Lucas was doing with the prequels and how they fit into his own version of Star Wars and why it was kind of important to have the series go away from him. Not because I'm trying to dump on Lucas, but mainly to explain sort of where he was in his life and what happened with him as a creator. And why it actually works better to launch it into a protected franchise under a studio like Disney. Before we do that, let's talk about the other massive weekend movie, the movie that's probably going to be a contender for biggest box office success ever in the history of the universe. That would be Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip. Now, what's interesting with this movie is they oftentimes do stuff called counter-programming for films like Star Wars when they come out. They did this, I remember, with Iron Man. I said, it's funny, I said this to the rep for Alvin and the Chipmunks. I was talking, she's like, this is odd that they're releasing it during Star Wars. And I pointed out to her, I said, well, there are some movies that get counter-programming. And I pointed out that Iron Man, when that came out, there was a film called Maid of Honor with Patrick Dempsey that came out against it. It actually did pretty well. When The Dark Knight came out, a movie called Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, another romantic comedy, came out against it and actually did pretty well. These counter-programming films tend to do well. Alvin and the Chipmunks is a little odd because Star Wars certainly is going for a kid's audience as much as it's going for the nostalgia and grown-up audience. I mean, Star Wars is going for everybody. I've got a 7-year-old who wants to see the movie, who I remember was walking through a movie theater with him, and he saw the poster this summer, and he's like, oh, Star Wars! And I'm like, okay, well, you know, he wants to see it. And he was, at the time, I think he was 6, or just turned 7. So Alvin and the Chipmunks seems like an odd piece of counter-programming because Star Wars definitely fits into the same demographic. Let's still talk a little bit about that movie. Dave is thinking of proposing to his girlfriend, so the chipmunks chase him across the country to try and break up the engagement.
You tried like my grandmother! This is awesome! Don't believe me, just watch! Come on! When I say party, you say Alvin! Party!
Alvin!
Party!
Alvin!
Said that in the non-party way, man.
Whoa, buzzkill.
Well, there you have it. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, this happens again. This happens whenever I do an Alvin and the Chipmunks movie. I get chipmunked in the middle of the review, and you now get it as Kevin the Chipmunk. I promise this won't be happening too long, but these are my thoughts on Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Road Chip, as a chipmunk myself. I have always liked the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies. I enjoyed them when they first came out. I think it was 2007 was when they did an animated one back in the 80s, but this one being this new version of it came out in 2007. And I remember taking my older sons, who at the time were like 6 and 4, and I got a chance to see it through their eyes because I took them with me. And it made the movie very different. It made the movie very sweet. It made the movie a lot of fun. I saw what they were laughing at, and they were pretty early in watching movies at that point, so I got a good sense of how good this movie was for kids. Now, the Squeakquel and the Chipwrecked movie, I wasn't a big fan of. I thought they were cute for what they are, and they were fine, but I didn't think they were as charming as the first one was. This one kind of recaptures that charm. It falls into cliche and silliness and corniness, but that's okay. It's an Alvin and the Chipmunks movie. I can survive that. It's cute. It doesn't try to be anything more than it is, and it has some pretty crazy performances in there, one by Tony Hale. And there's also like a cameo in there. I hope this doesn't spoil anything for anyone, but there's a cameo by John Waters, and they make a Pink Flamingo joke in an Alvin and the Chipmunks movie. That takes some stones to make a Pink Flamingo joke in Alvin and the Chipmunks. Of course, if you get the joke, you're not corrupted by the movie. And no, like, 6-year-old should be getting a joke about pink flamingos. So still, Alvin and the Chipmunks, the road chip, while corny and silly and childish, still is good for the kids. And I enjoyed it, because I'm a child at heart. Alvin and the Chipmunks, the road chip, kinda rocks.
It kinda rocks. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Oh, whew, my voice is back to normal. Let's continue with Body. This is a smaller release. It's kind of oddly a Christmas movie because it takes place right before Christmas, although it's not exactly a Peace on Earth, Goodwill to Men movie. Three young women break into a house while a family is away on vacation to have a party and end up killing a man who discovers them there.
Oh my God.
This is unbelievable.
Party time!
Hey, Callie. Why are all the photos in here of Asian people? What was that?
Run.
Hey, what's going on here?
Oh my God.
His neck. He's not breathing. I'm going to call an ambulance.
You can't.
This is an independent film, and you can probably find it on video on demand if it's not anywhere near you locally. And that's actually the way movies are going now. If it's a small enough film, you don't have to find a movie theater near you. You can rent it online, or even before it reaches sort of like just regular video, like DVD and Blu-ray, you pay a little bit more to see it on demand, but it's no more than what you would spend with a ticket if it was playing at a regular movie house. Body is a small movie. It's got a cast of like 6. It's not very many people at all. And very limited locations. And for that, it actually works. It reminds me of these smaller horror films and thrillers that you saw back in the 70s and 80s that they would do periodically. And these sort of direct-to-video, very small releases are replacing the run-of-the-mill horror movies, and even sometimes the B and the C movies that are dropped into the drive-in that existed back in the 60s and 70s and even into the 80s. We lost those for a while, and they went to just direct to VHS or cable, and they tended to have a stamp down on the mark of quality because they just wouldn't survive a big release. But I mean, like, Body's not going to do well to a wide audience. I thought it played with some interesting ideas. It plays with some moral conundrums. What do you do if you're in this sort of situation? And it shows basically three people trying to hack their way through staging a crime, trying to figure out a way to explain why they ended up with a dead body in a house that they don't belong in. And it appears to try to have a moral center at times, but it certainly loses track of that. And I'm not saying that this movie's trying to teach you a lesson. But when you have a film like this, you need to have a sense of right and wrong, or it just gets murky. I mean, it's one thing to make it a movie where there is somebody who you feel sympathy for. And there's also an alternate take to make a movie of bad people and sort of making them anti-heroes, which these girls sort of become, but then it kind of flops around back and forth. It doesn't have a good focus on where it's trying to make a statement in terms of morality and the right and the wrong of the situation. It takes a little bit of time to get there too. Once you finally get to this point and there's actually a crime involved and a body, when it gets there, it's interesting what they're doing, but it loses focus and it's trying to be open-ended and it tries to do a shifting perspective. And the result is more of a unfocused nature than it feeling like it was deliberately trying to make the audience keep turning and questioning who their loyalties are for. Still, it's an interesting enough movie if you can check it out, but I'm still going to have to say that Body kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, yes, finally, I'm going to talk about Star Wars The Force Awakens.
For
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, getting ready to talk about the biggest movie, possibly the biggest movie of the year, definitely going to be the biggest movie of the year, and that would be Star Wars The Force Awakens. This is a film that a lot of people have been waiting for, and everyone's got their own personal story behind it. Now, me, specifically, I was 5 when the first Star Wars came out back in 1977. I was just sort of this headstrong kid. I was, in first grade. Told my parents I only liked cartoon movies. And then they took me to see Star Wars, and that literally changed my life. That sounds so silly and corny and cliche, but it became a part of me. It was what defined my childhood, not just what I wanted to watch in the movies, but also what I wanted to buy and play. It dictated my Christmas presents for years to come. It's funny because I hear people talk about Star Wars now, and I mean they're people in their late 20s and into their 30s, and they're like, "Oh, I grew up with it." I'm like, "You don't understand. I was a child. I was the perfect age to see this when it first came out." I remember when they first started merchandising the things. I still have the original land speeder and a bunch of my original action figures. I mean, they were played with. They're out of the box. They're not collectibles. But I have all those original toys. I still have them. Some of them are completely falling apart. But this is so defining of my childhood. And that, to me, is why it's such a big deal to see this new movie. And yeah, I like the prequels. I'll go on record and say I like the prequels. I mean, there are people who are so harsh on the prequels, and because it's the hipster thing to do. Prequels are stupid, and they ruined my childhood. The prequels didn't ruin your childhood, first of all. There's a whole group of people who grew up with the prequels. The people in their 20s did grow up with the prequels, and maybe they discovered the other stuff later on DVD, but they maybe saw The Phantom Menace when they were 5. And look, here's a little bit of a defense of the prequels before I even get into the review of the new movie. You got to realize what was going on with the prequels. I think a lot of people misunderstand them. It has to do with where Lucas was mentally and where he was in his life at the time. When he made the first Star Wars, he was a young filmmaker trying to make a name for himself. In a way, he was trying to relive his youth. When he was a little kid, he goes see serials in the movie houses. If for those who don't know, it used to be in the 40s and 50s when they'd show a movie, they had newsreels and cartoons and shorts and extra stuff that showed before the movies, not just trailers. And they'd have these 15 to sometimes 30 minute long short films that were like 15 parts, a serial. Now, a lot of people talk about Flash Gordon being one of the inspirations as a serial, but I say go and check out the Terry and the Pirate serial from 1940. It really is, to me, the definitive original Star Wars type of serial, because it's about a young, blonde, sort of whiny kid and his older friend who's dark hair and kind of a swashbuckler. And they have these sidekicks, this really tall sidekick and this really short sidekick who kind of help them out along the way. It really is the template for Star Wars. As just as much as the Hidden Fortress was. I mean, I think Lucas leaned more towards the Kurosawa inspirations in interviews because he wanted to sound like he was being more irreverent and artistic than saying, well, it was this crappy little serial I saw as a kid. And in particular, the special editions, at that time, he had a young child. Back when he was doing the original Star Wars, he was focused on filmmaking as a career. When he was doing the special editions and the prequels, he was focused on being a new dad again. And so he wanted to, for example, make Han not just straight up murder a character. And I get that because Han Solo became a hero. And Han Solo was partly the focus of the trilogy as much as Luke was. So he wanted to not make him just this cold-blooded killer. And that's why he retroactively had Greedo shoot first. My biggest problem with that scene is that Greedo's 3 feet from him. How could he miss? But still, I can still watch Star Wars and enjoy the movie. But that's where Lucas was coming from with the prequels. And I enjoy them for what they are. I enjoy them for being a homage to these serials in both good and bad. And yeah, Jar Jar still annoys me. But at that point, he was making a kid's movie. He was making the movie for his kids, who was like, he had a toddler at the time. As opposed to making the original Star Wars for the kid and himself. And if you frame it that way, that they make a lot more sense. And it makes sense what he's trying to do. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk now about Star Wars The Force Awakens, the movie itself, and is it as good as everyone says it is? Is it worth the hype? And you're going to get my official opinion on it just here in a minute. Han Solo and Chewbacca find themselves helping two unlikely travelers trying to deliver a droid to General Leia Organa.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish what you started.
There are stories about what happened.
It's true. All of it.
First of all, I'm not going to drop any spoilers here. If you want spoilerific reviews and analysis, you got the entirety of the internet for that. I am not here to be a jerk. There's going to be jerks out there, and there are going to be people out there spoiling it. But here's my non-spoiler review of Star Wars The Force Awakens. I loved it. It was exactly what it needed to be. It was a Star Wars movie for Star Wars fans. It took full advantage of having the original cast there because that's what gives it its feel of an authentic Star Wars movie. You didn't get that with the prequels because the prequels obviously couldn't have an older Han Solo in them. The prequels couldn't have Luke and Leia in them. Certainly not Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher because they weren't even born the characters during the prequels. This one actually feels like a continuation of Return of the Jedi. Now, it's still a J.J. Abrams film. It certainly has a J.J. Abrams feel to it. If you've seen enough of J.J. Abrams' work, you can see his influence in this film. And that's okay, because I think what kind of really helped enrich the original trilogy was they weren't all directed by Lucas. Lucas was directed only like 6 movies, and 4 of them being Star Wars films. He had then American Graffiti and THX 1138, and that's it. You had a director being J.J. Abrams paying full respect to the movies and world that came before it. It wasn't some egomaniacal director. I talked about Justin Lin in the first segment, talking about how it seems like, well, I'm taking risks. I'm being bold with Star Trek. That's not what J.J. Abrams is doing with that. He's not taking risks and being bold with Star Wars The Force Awakens. He's making a good, authentic Star Wars movie. Now, there is a bit of familiar ground that is being retread here, and there are certain plot points and elements that are almost too familiar. And I get why they did it, because they're paying homage to the original films. And they're trying to make it something, you know, it's okay to be a little bit repetitive in a serial. So I was okay with that. But ultimately, this Star Wars movie is everything that you wanted to see. And if you go back and you look what Star Wars did in the 90s, when kind of no one was looking, it started to develop role-playing games, additional books and comics, and eventually video games, and eventually TV shows, which was called the Extended Universe. And only geeks knew about this. This was not mainstream, but that's really when Star Wars became a bigger galaxy. It was no longer just about the original characters. And there's this entire history that has been written after Return of the Jedi, and they're not following it in this movie, but it showed that you can hand this off to other writers and hand this off to other artists, and they can make some pretty cool stuff with it. That's really what opens it to a bigger galaxy, and we're getting that here. And of course, with Disney opening a new Star Wars film every year, because we've got Rogue One coming out next year, and then Episode 8 coming out the year after, and the Han Solo prequel coming out after that, it shows that Disney is going to mine this galaxy for all the cool stories that are available. And that's what you're getting, a taste of Star Wars. But the music, the action, the characters, the new characters, which are getting ready to set the stage for a bigger universe. And just the effects and how they blend CGI with practical effects and how they use CGI to their benefit, that's all wonderful stuff. And that is what makes Star Wars The Force Awakens such a great movie. It's going to be the biggest movie of the year, and it was such a joy to see. And I think the fans are going to like it. I think the casual fans are going to like it. And even if you don't know anything about it, you can enjoy it too. So Star Wars The Force Awakens totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to head on to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Sisters, the box office, and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Now that I've got the big Star Wars question out of the way, let's talk about another movie that is coming out this weekend, and that is Sisters. Tina Fey and Amy Poehler star as adult sisters trying to clean out their childhood home, which they unexpectedly discover their parents are selling.
No! Mom and Dad sold our childhood home. This should have been passed on.
All we need you to do is clean out your bedroom.
Oh, boy.
It's a damn shame that you never had your night here.
We cannot have a party.
You've been divorced 2 years. You can't avoid putting yourself out there forever. Yes, I'll be
a woman. I've been thinking.
Why?
Will you not drink tonight so I can let my freak flag fly?
I would love to.
Like I said earlier, this is quintessential counter-programming. On a weekend with a massive blockbuster tentpole geek release, I guess you could say. It's not a romantic comedy, but it is a chick flick. I mean, it's a movie about women, and it's mainly aimed at target market of women, especially adult women, because I saw the numbers that Star Wars, at least its opening night on Thursday, was playing something like 70-some percent male and over 50% over 35, which makes sense because this is, that's the target market of A, people who grew up with Star Wars, and B, people who were going to either suffer the next day at work because they had to go or could take it off. You're going to get the kids and everything in the mornings and the matinees on Saturday and Sunday. But for Thursday night, for people who still had to go to work on Friday, that was the kind of people who are going to go see Star Wars. Sisters is, it's an R-rated film, and it's for grown-up women, and it's for them to look back at what it's like to be in your 40s and maybe not have your life together. That's a general theme in movies. A lot of people like that because there's a lot of people who don't have their life together. What's neat about this one is Amy Poehler and Tina Fey are extremely funny ladies. They are very, very funny women. This is only the second movie they've done together. I remember the first movie they did was Baby Mama back in, what, like 2008? That came out right around the time Dark Knight did. I think it came out a couple weeks before it or a week or two before it. And they tend to do well, at least historically, with one movie against a big box office juggernaut. And this movie is not meant to be a groundbreaking film. This movie is just meant to be a funny movie with a little bit of heart. And that's why it works. It's basically a house party movie. And it's the kind of movie you see about high school or college students or college age students. So we've seen this kind of movie before. What makes it unique and different is that its main characters are in their early to mid 40s. And that's kind of what makes it unique and different. And it's a bunch of grown-ups acting like they aren't grown-ups. The driving force isn't, can we get the beer? Because they can get the beer. They can get the drinks because they're adults. It's there to be funny. It's them working out the problems. And in the hands of different actresses, it wouldn't be nearly as good. Now, it's not a perfect movie, but it certainly has some funny parts to it. It also has some heart. It actually does some stuff with the characters that isn't awkward or out of place or isn't forced. Like a lot of times in these goofy sort of second coming of age movies. You've got the characters just being silly and stupid for a while, and then they say, oh, we need to have a plot, and then they try and back end a story and a conflict in there. It works in this one because it's kind of pervasive in the story, which is what you want to do. You want to have the conflict and the resolution all organically flow. It also has some incredibly hilarious performances by people like John Cena, who also was very funny in Trainwreck this summer. So you've got some neat performances. You've got some cool elements to the film. It's going to be under the radar kind of this whole week because it's opening up against a giant. But it's, I think, going to do well enough just as a piece of counter programming that's different, not just for the stuff coming out this week, but for the stuff coming out in the next couple weeks. So I'm going to have to say that Sisters kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, was I correct? I said that In the Heart of the Sea was going to make $11 million. I think I was right on the nose with that. It made almost exactly $11 million. So that $11 to $12 million range was pretty much exactly what I predicted it would make. Now, it lost just barely to Mockingjay Part 2, and that's been the ruler of the box office for the last 4 weeks, but that doesn't mean that Mockingjay Part 2 is a juggernaut. It just happens to be up against movies that weren't going to do super well. It was up against In the Heart of the Sea the week before Star Wars came out. Mockingjay is still underperforming significantly for a Hunger Games film. It is still not breaking any records. It's coming in under Mockingjay Part 1, which itself was coming in under the second Hunger Game movie, Catching Fire. So you're certainly seeing diminishing returns with this series. And I think while it's ultimately going to be fine for Lionsgate, they've made their money, this movie's going to be ending its run around 250 some million, maybe 260, maybe 270. It's not even going to come close to getting the 300 million that the last one got, or the other two were guaranteed. And the problem with Mockingjay was each of these movies got more expensive as they went on. But Mockingjay Part 2 is, I think, the most expensive of the entire series. And these two movies were $300 million budget together. And yeah, they're going to make their return. All that money ends this weekend anyway. So what Mockingjay has now is pretty much 90 to 95% of what it's going to end with. Now, that leads us to this weekend. What do I think Star Wars is going to do? Now, look, can I just say it's going to make a kajillion dollars? That's all you can do with a movie like this. The difference between this and either The Avengers or Jurassic World is nobody saw those $200 million openings coming. People were just kind of halfway through the weekend thinking, oh my gosh, these are huge movies. People are very excited for them. Everyone knew Star Wars was going to be huge. The difference is The Avengers came out in May, Jurassic World came out in June, and they were going up against massive money-making weekends already. The highest grossing weekend ever in December for a movie was The Hobbit, The Unexpected Journey, which was $84 million. This is going to beat that in a day. Within the first 24 hours, or, well, 36 if you count how many preview shows they had on Thursday, you know, Star Wars is above that. Star Wars made over $50 million just on its opening night, you know, from 7 o'clock on, and then they're playing it around the clock throughout the weekend. You're probably going to have this $100 million first day, if you count Friday as a full first day, and you include the Thursday numbers with that. And it is likely going to be well over $200 million, possibly $220 to $230 million when all is said and done when the movie's over. It is going to make more than most movies made this year just in its first weekend. And then it has next week, which Christmas is a big time for movies. It's going to have a huge weekend next week because there's no real big competition for it. All the competition is stuff like Joy and Concussion and Daddy's Home. These are not movies that are going to steal much of Star Wars audience. And then you're into January, you know, which is, if you recall, earlier in 2015, American Sniper did a fantastic opening weekend and just stuck around for a while because there really wasn't anything great coming out in the theaters or anything strong that could even give it a run for its money. So yeah, Star Wars is going to be huge. I was earlier this year saying, cautioning, it may not make $200 million its opening weekend. I think that it's beyond question it's going to make that much. Now, yeah, Star Wars is definitely going to win this weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. There's some movies from the summer that are coming out, some good, some bad, and you can catch them on DVD and Blu-ray, and of course on demand. You've got Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, which is one of those you keep forgetting came out because so many other movies made headlines, you know, either Jurassic World or Avengers Age of Ultron for being such huge movies, or movies like Fantastic Four, which also comes out, which is kind of a bust. And then you've got Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which was a very strong, solid action movie and performed exactly to expectations. People just, oh, yeah, I guess that movie did come out, as opposed to like Terminator, which everyone remembers came out because it underperformed. But yeah, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation is out. That's worth checking out. Ted 2 is out, not nearly as good as the first one. It was really kind of disappointing. This is definitely going to do better on home video because of the weed smoking market. Fantastic Four, we talked about that. Not very good. Kind of a embarrassing black mark on the series. The Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials. That one was also terrible. Did not do as well as the first. Even though it justifies Fox making more of these movies, we're in that realm of again, diminishing returns. People are trying to find another franchise to take over the Hunger Games, which I don't think you will get that. You've already got the superhero movies, and I think these young adult books might be on the way down in terms of trends. And that's it for this week. Next week is my Big Fat Christmas show. I'm going to be talking about Concussion, Daddy's Home, Point Break, Joy, and The Hateful Eight in its 70mm Roadshow production. Until then, may the force be with you, and have a fat time at the movies.